Well, you know what? Before we begin, because this is a really fascinating topic, the one you're going to talk about tonight. But before we begin, I just want to provide everyone with a brief overview of the program. So tonight you're going to learn how and why energy draining occurs, the six ways to immediately recognize when your energy is being drained, two prominent patterns of energy draining, three actions you can take to neutralize energy draining from others. That's an important one. How to utilize the 72-hour rule to strengthen yourself in relationships, and a whole lot more. So, Eileen, let's begin. Now, would you explain what energy draining means? Can you just give us an overview?
Well, energy draining can also be seen as, talked about as energy sapping, codependency, or manipulation. I like the term energy sapping because it describes what is actually happening in these situations. And I find even though we have known a lot about codependency for many years, most people don't understand the system, why it is that energy draining happens and what exactly it is. I prefer energy sapping, actually. I got that term from a Dr. Karugala, who wrote a book in the 1950s. She's a medical doctor, and a lot of people kept talking to her about psychics, and she said, I don't believe this psychic business, and she set about to prove that it was not true. And the way she did it is she got permission from other doctors that she knew to take psychics into their clinic, and she'd say, okay, whoever in the waiting room sits in that seat over there, I want the psychic to tell me what's going on with them, and then I have permission to go back to the doctor's office and look in the medical files and verify whether this information is true or not. And the long and the short of it is that she became a true believer because she found that the psychics not only diagnosed the medical issues, but they often picked up things that the doctors missed. And she also became friends with some of the psychics, and she'd go to parties with them, and a few of them would say to her, watch that person over there, because that person will sap your energy. And she finally asked them, well, what is it? How do you know? And many of them saw auras. They could see, you know, many people talk about the seven chakras that we have, energy vortexes that are up and down our body. And what would happen is that a person that was described as an energy vampire or an energy sapper would be a person who would have six of their energy centers. The energy would be closely packed to their bodies, whereas most people have it fluffy over all seven. Except in the solar plexus region, there would be shooting fingers of energy. And after about an hour of being around other people whose energy was all fluffy, their energy would now be packed tight to their body over all seven chakras, and the energy-draining individual would have all their chakras evenly fluffy. In other words, they just sucked it up. Right?
They just slurped up the energy.
Right, and that made such an impression on me. I started talking about energy sapping and energy.
Yeah, I've heard the term energy vampire before, and I guess, you know, we use it rather loosely. I have in the past, not really being clear about what it really means.
Yes, and so to me, an energy vampire is a person who is utilizing my energy without my full permission. And I was drawn to this. Let me give just a little background for myself. I originally married at age 19. I've been married. I'm in my third marriage now, and I lived for more than 20 years as a single person, as a single parent, dating. And I was so disillusioned with dating that for the last 10 years, I gave up on it. I didn't date anybody at all. And one of the things that I learned toward the end of as my first marriage ended after 11 years, was about energy draining. I felt that my husband had been using me, and so I set about to learn about energy draining. The reason I think it's important for people to know about it sounds fairly negative focus compared to, say, the way conscious dating is written, but in reality, it's not negatively focused. In my local Bay Area newspaper yesterday, there was an article that says more people are saying I don't than I do, and they were reporting that the newest minority in California is married couples For the first time in 60 years, a majority of the state's adults are either single or separated. Well, this says a lot about how we look at relationships and what's happening in relationships. Now, they've given a lot of ideas about why this is. They can be economic. There are more opportunities for women. But they're also talking about how our image of love is changing. 3 in 10 women in California have never married, and 38% of men have never married. Now, we may not be looking to get married, but we are talking about committing in some level to relationships. Mm-hmm. And one of the women they interviewed said, why would you get married if all it does is lead to divorce?
Yes. Well, and exactly, with the divorce rate being so high, there's a lot of fear around that.
Right.
Fear of failure, making a mistake.
So when I'm talking about energy sapping behavior, I am addressing one of the contributing factors to divorce, The impact of energy sapping. When we allow other people to use our energy without our permission, we get drained out. And I think that we have an epidemic of energy sapping in our culture, and I think we are also trained to engage in energy sapping behaviors, energy draining behaviors, as part of our dating. For example, on my radio program, I had a man who runs the Date Safe Project, and one of the things he was talking about and emphasized so much is that in our culture, it's not okay to ask someone, I think the name of his book is May I Kiss You. It's not okay to ask somebody if you can kiss them. You're supposed to read the sign. And that is energy draining. That is manipulative. We're not being upfront and genuine with people. So we engage.
Not to mention that it takes an awful lot of work to try and figure that out.
Well, yeah, and that's why I'm so excited about this. When I learned about this energy sapping, when I created this understanding or discovered it, it changed my life. Suddenly I could see where people were draining my energy. Now, one of the reasons that people can't see it is because usually we were raised by parents who were themselves energy sapping, and we've just learned that that's the way it is, so we don't notice it.
Right, so that's our model for adult behavior.
Right, and most people are not manipulative across the board. They have pockets of manipulation, places where they will depend on other people's energy instead of using their own. It could be somebody in a relationship who passively doesn't choose the restaurant when you're going out to dinner, or who doesn't show up on time to keep their commitments for relationships, or they could use guilt trips or they could lie or cheat. And the ultimate energy-draining relationship is the abusive relationship, where the two people are terrified of being separate and on their own and responsible, and they'd rather stay, or they choose to stay, in a relationship where they literally might kill each other rather than take the risk of being alone.
Right. Eileen, I want to ask you a question about manipulation, because I think a lot of people might be thinking that, you know, everybody manipulates at some point in their life. So shouldn't it be expected in some ways?
I want to get to that in just a minute, but let me just talk about what does work in a relationship.
All right.
The ideal relationship is when one whole complete unit and another whole complete unit come together and form something more, which we could call a unity. And human beings aren't perfect, but the more complete we are, the more our relationships, the better our relationships work. And I just want to mention a couple of the benefits in knowing about energy sapping. You reduce the drama and complications. It saves you time. It allows you to move on to somebody that's not going to work well for you. It keeps you from a lot of anger and frustration and guilt, and it leads you to more self-empowerment, and it speeds your learning so that you can get on to other things.
Yeah, so this is really critical
that
you're able to identify that.
Right. And identifying, being conscious, is a big part of the whole thing. And that's why I sort of sidestep here and go into a little bit of negativity, which is not my usual stance. My theme for my radio program is to pay attention to what you want to become and not to what you want to overcome. So I'm very positively focused. But we need to take just a minute to look at what it is that we're dealing with so that we know how to deal with it better. So to answer your question, yes, manipulation is normal. In fact, everybody is born manipulative, every single one of us. And the reason for that is because we're born with a little tiny body and a brain that doesn't work yet, and we cannot survive in our world on our own. So we have to have somebody I call an energy broker. We have to have somebody who interacts with the world for us, gets food for us, keeps us comfortable, keeps us safe. And so it's natural and normal that we learn to put our energy through other people. If the baby doesn't have somebody who's an energy broker, they're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all born energy draining, which means that that it's not a bad thing. Where it turns not so good is when it goes on longer than it's supposed to go on. Because our definition of maturity is not, oh, I need somebody else in order to function in the world. I need to put my energy through somebody else in order to eat or live or survive. That's not maturity. Maturity is I put a majority of my own energy through myself. That make sense?
That makes perfect sense.
Right. So what that means is that at some point in life, there's got to be a turnaround point. And what I have discovered is that the turnaround point occurs between the ages of 3 and 4. That means a 3- or 4-year-old child is able to get their own drink of water, ask for what they want, pull the covers up over themselves. They can't go out and get a job, but they can begin to do things for themselves.
They have a little bit of independence.
Right. And the way things are set up is we're supposed to, through our childhood, put energy through ourselves more and more and put it less and less through others. The problem is that not everybody makes this transition. Parents think it's too tough on children to ask them to be that responsible, or the parents may be energy draining themselves, which makes them afraid to be separate, which means they keep their children connected to them. So what that means then is that people can grow up their bodies so that they look like they're adults, but emotionally they're still operating at the age of 3 to 4.
And need an energy broker.
And the way you can tell is that that person, let's say I'm in a relationship with you and I ask you if you can go someplace with me on Saturday, and if I'm an energy drainer, if I'm an energy sapper, and you say no, I'll say, oh, please, I have to have you go. You know, you won't be happy without, you know, I will need you to be with me. If I'm an adult, I'm mature, and I ask you to go and you say no, then I say, well, okay, I'll be all right without you. I'll find some other way. I'll go with another person or I'll go alone. But I will be operating out of want, not need. And a lot of times in relationships, people will come to my office, my therapy office, and they'll say, how can an adult behave that way? And the point is that in that area, that person is not adult.
And it may not be so obviously demonstrated, as in the example that you use.
Right. You won't necessarily know, though I can go into the how you tell immediately that your energy is being drained.
Yeah, I think that would be great. Because there are some clues, obviously, around that will help you recognize.
Totally clear cues. Yeah. Let me back up just a minute and talk about the theoretical framework that I use in my work as a therapist and in my writing. And that is, I have a book that I'm in the process of completing right now. It's called Born to Learn. And the notion that I put out in that book is that the earth is a giant school. We all come here in order to learn. And because of the principle of the way that something starts off, it tends to continue. What happens in our childhood is we get homework assignments, and we work on those homework assignments for the remainder of our lives until we either get them or we die. Now, the design is that we're supposed to be able to complete our homework assignments, but as we don't complete them, what we do is we repeat them and we repeat,
mm-hmm.
And each time the lesson is a harsher lesson. The good news is the minute we complete the learning, we are free to go on to something else.
And hallelujah for that.
Yeah. So I don't know if you've had Dr. Harville Hendrix. He's the author of Finding the Love You Want and Keeping the Love You Find. But I had Dr. Hendrix and his wife, Dr. Helen L. Hunt, as guests on my radio program. And he he kind of illustrated for me what the homework assignments in relationships are. He says that during childhood, we're busy creating an image in our mind, which he calls the imago, of our partner, our future partner. And curiously enough, this imago contains the best and the worst of what we see and experience when we're children. So then what happens is we come together with somebody, and in the beginning we just, oh, we're so in love, we think this person is so wonderful. And then there comes a point where we have a level of commitment that we make, whether it's engagement or moving in together or deciding to marry, and all of a sudden things shift. And instead of being madly in love, we start having a power struggle, mm-hmm. which is really interesting. Now, because as a giant school, what we're really in relationships for is to help each other to grow. Do you follow?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so then we, even though it's not totally conscious, we match up perfectly with the people that will help us to grow the most. We usually pick people for whom what we need is the hardest thing. Like my husband Bob, he grew up in a family where there was not a lot of emotional affection, right? I grew up in a situation where I came to believe that I was unlovable. So he was absolutely perfect for me because I wanted a lot of reassurance that I was loved, and he didn't give it out because he never learned it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
So the very hardest thing for him to do was what I needed. So he will grow by learning to do the hardest thing for him, and I will grow by learning to insist that I be loved.
And that is the key, is it not? Because, as you said earlier, it's being aware. And through awareness, you recognize that there is growth and there are lessons for the two of you.
Right.
For people
right.
who don't get that, there's a lot of pain. And, you know, that's, as you said earlier as well, that's where the relationships end, because they're not having those conversations.
Yes, and because we think when we get into the power struggle that the relationship is not working, when
right.
in fact, that's exactly what is happening. It is working. And the way we encounter these lessons is a very important way. We encounter them through the emotions that come up. Now, I want to point out that my website is emotionalpro.com. That's a name my son created for me because of my powerful interest in human emotions.
And it's a great name.
I like it.
Yeah.
And emotions, what I have learned is that emotions actually have been given to human beings in order to help us navigate life. Each emotion has a different signal that it gives to us. It tells us what action we need to. And when we listen to it and work with it and follow what it says, then our lives flow just like we were reading a user's manual, and that makes it a lot easier.
So, and Eileen, if I can just interject for a second. So mm-hmm. what are the positive emotions that would indicate life is good and you're on your path? And then what are the negative emotions that someone may feel when they're off target, when they're not on vision?
You know, that's a self-explanatory thing. Of course we feel good, happy, joyful, loving, loved, etc. when we're on path. And we feel frustrated, angry, upset, jealous, nervous, stressed, etc. when we're not on path.
Mm-hmm.
But let me get back to the whole issue of how do you tell when your energy is being drained? Because it's through your emotions that you can tell immediately. Guilt is the handmaiden of energy sapping. Because when you take responsibility for what's going on with somebody else, then you will feel guilty if their life doesn't go well very often. So guilt, anger that is out of proportion to what has actually happened. If, for example, you just you're my date and you don't allow me to walk through a door ahead of you, or you don't pull my seat out at the table, and I get furious with you, that is a sign that there's something going on that is energy draining. We don't do that. The only other possible thing that could be is if something is coming up from our very early past. Another emotion is confusion. I will think I have figured out something, or we have an agreement, and then I'll get together with you, and you'll say, that's not what we agreed at all. And I'll feel confused when I wasn't confused when I was on my own. And remember that description of the solar plexus, how we have the shooting fingers of energy. That's our power center. And when we're being drained, we can feel a knot or a tingling in the solar plexus. I had an experience with my daughter one time when she came home from school in the middle of a school day claiming that she was worried about our dog dying, and yet my solar plexus was going off, and I said, wait a minute, you know, I'm really sorry you feel this way, but my solar plexus is going off here. That means you're manipulating me in some way. What else is going on? And it turned out that she'd had an argument with the teacher and was afraid to go to school.
And you can really relate that to the inner voice tied to the solar plexus, because that's the gut instinct.
Absolutely.
That is guiding you.
Right. So another way is that you feel like you're being had, even if you can't put your finger on it, somehow
mm-hmm.
you're just, I'm being had. And because your energy is being drained, you have a desire to escape. And one of the funny things that happens, this often happens with people who have energy-draining parents, they'll go and visit their parents, and they'll be falling asleep because tiredness is another one. They'll be falling asleep and just, I have to get out of here. And yet, they're half hour away in their car, and they're singing and feeling good, and they're wondering, why? Why did I feel so bad at my parents when now I'm feeling so wonderful? And that is because they moved away from the ongoing energy draining. So especially when three or more of these come together, and especially if you also ask the question, is my energy being drained here? The chances are great that it is.
And I think what you said just now is very powerful, because you have to ask yourself the question. You have to be going back to awareness. The situation can continue up until the point where you stop and say, what is happening? And that's from that point on, you can dissect it and you can evaluate it, but you need to have that moment in time where you become aware of what's going on.
And that's where I think the idea of our Earth being a giant school works, because if mm-hmm. I know that everything that's happening, especially things that are frustrating or don't feel good, are opportunities for me to learn, and I know that as soon as I identify what I need to learn and learn it, then I can move on, that's a high motivation to stay conscious.
Yeah, that sure is. Okay, so we talked about some of the behaviors, and how do we minimize or neutralize these energy-draining experiences in our lives?
Okay, I want to get to that after I talk about the patterns. There are two patterns, basically, where people manipulate, and they're pretty easy. People either manipulate passively or aggressively. Passive can include things like illness, giving the silent treatment, being late for things, making suicidal threats, or not taking initiative about things, not taking responsibility. And aggressive patterns can be threats, like threats of leaving, or I'm not going to love you anymore if you do that, promises to remove things or people or events that are important to you, like, you know, you want to do that? Fine, there's no sex this evening if mm-hmm. you do that. Or telling, somebody might tell you, oh, you know, other people that we both know also have this opinion of you, so you better not do that. Those are all aggressive forms of manipulating. And there are a couple of things I want to remind people is, number one, most often it's not a full pattern, it's spotty. You know, there are few people that are just manipulative across the board, though usually people have been doing it for a long time. And also that the energy-sapping individual has an uncanny knack of irritating you in the areas that are most important to you. If you're proud of being a thoughtful partner, for example, that will be the very area where you will be undermined. Oh, well, you know, you are the least thoughtful person I have ever run into.
So they go for the soft spot.
Go for the soft spot, the vulnerable spot.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they have a radar. They're looking, like children do, too. They're looking for, where are the weak points here? And also, if you directly confront somebody and say, you know, I think you're draining my energy here, characteristically, the response will be something that says you are bad, wrong, or crazy, usually in that order. So you ask the question about what to do to neutralize. And I mentioned before that as my first marriage ended, I was very upset that my first husband had manipulated me and he used me, and I wanted to figure that out. And I thought, well, I'm a therapist and I meet a lot of people and I'm living a life here. I can get a lot of information on how it is that people manipulate one another. And so I began watching and studying, and lo and behold, after about 6 months, I came up with what I call the first law of energy sapping. It takes one to know one. Okay, so if my husband was using me, then I was also using him. And this is key. I told you before the circumstances of my life, I felt unlovable. And that is the way I was using my husband. He was telling me, you are lovable enough to marry. And I soaked that up, and that's the way I was using him. Mm-hmm. Now, this is key because the way to actually stop other people from draining your energy is to end your own energy-draining behaviors.
And doesn't that go back to Earth as a school, and life lessons is learning your lessons?
You got it. You're wonderful. Yeah. So the energy-sapping individual actually is operating as your teacher. Remember, they poke into the vulnerable places?
Right.
If you really look at it, the energy-sapping individual is showing you where you're not complete. Does that make sense?
Oh, it sure does, especially in light of a little argument I had with my husband today. So everything is becoming very clear. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay, so this energy-sapping individual, we usually are very angry with them. They're draining my energy, they're sapping me or whatever. But reality is that it takes one to know one. Therefore, if you have energy-draining people in your life, it's an indicator that you yourself engage in energy-draining behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the principle that what you have inside of you, you tend to attract from outside of you, you will tend to attract people who drain your energy. But also because of that principle, when you start changing your own energy draining so that you're operating on the basis of want and completeness and maturity and responsibility instead of need and fear and all those other things, then you will stop attracting energy-sapping individuals.
What comes to mind is a mirror. You know, as I look in the mirror, what I see in my partner, who's on the other side, is what I see in myself.
Uh-huh.
Right? It's exactly
Absolutely.
The same thing.
Absolutely.
It's a wonderful way, the way that you've put it, it really becomes quite clear.
Yes. And that's what I just love about this. And it, you know, a lot of times when people are in energy-sapping relationships, let's say they come to my office for therapy, they'll say, well, why do I have to do all the work?
Mm-hmm.
And I will say to them, well, you need to do the work because it's not about the other person. It's about you. It's about you learning to end your own energy-draining activities. You can't change the other person, but you can change yourself. And they're pointing out where you need to change. Now, the reason we don't like to do that in relationships is because we're concerned if we make a change, we could lose the other person. And that, too, is energy-draining because we're feeling like we need another person to make us complete, or we need that particular other person to make us complete, when in fact that's not true. It's nice to have them there. It's wonderful. Most of us prefer to be in a relationship because we're relationship beings, but we don't actually need anybody to
mm-hmm.
complete us.
But the fear of losing your energy broker
you got
is
it.
Terrifying, I'm sure, for
yes,
most people.
Yes, and people, you know, the sad thing, like I said with abuse, the sad thing is that some people will face death rather than take the risk of being on their own. And I mentioned before that I was alone for 20 years. I didn't intend to be alone for 20 years, and I was raising my children and so forth. But what I learned as a result of that experience is that one of the things that we need to do in order to be able to fully connect with another person is to also be comfortable being alone, to recognize that being alone is not the same as being lonely. Being alone is about being separate. Being lonely, I've written a book called Exploring Loneliness with Your Child. When we're lonely, it's because we have more energy going out than we have coming in.
That's an interesting concept.
Yes. When I was early, I've been married to my husband now for 9 years, and early on in my marriage, when he wasn't giving me all those hugs and so forth, I would notice, here I am in a marriage after 20 years of being alone, and I feel lonely in this marriage. Mm-hmm. And I would go to him, knowing this, and I would say, I'm feeling lonely. That means there's more energy going out than coming in. Do you have, will you give me a hug? And he would, and I would be fine. And if he wasn't available for a hug, I would go do some of the things that bring energy into me, like walking in nature or meditating or swimming or reading some spiritually oriented material, which I love.
So just going back to what you said, how does law of attraction fit into all of this?
Well, you said it, the mirror. We attract what's inside of us. Like attracts like. We attract other energy-sapping individuals. If we don't want to be in an energy-draining relationship, then what we need to do is curtail our own energy draining. I grew up in a very energy-draining family, of course. This was my lesson. That's why I'm so excited about it. And I have progressed now. I'll be turning 65 this year. I've progressed to the point where I can honestly tell you I do not have people in my life who drain energy. I know one or two people that I've known for many years, and curiously enough, I watch them drain other people's energy, but they don't try it with me because I don't pull it in anymore.
Okay. And so how do you avoid that with these people if they're still in your life? How do you avoid having them suck your energy?
Well, first of all, you've got to make a decision that you're ready to end energy draining. And that means you've got to end your own energy draining. We can't do anything about anybody else. If you want somebody else to stop draining your energy, focus on yourself. Once you change yourself, everything around you will change. Law of attraction, mm-hmm. The Secret, all of that together. Then, based on the information that I've offered you, and by the way, I want to mention that for anybody who's listening, I have a small booklet that I wrote on energy draining, bouncing back from energy sapping. And I also have what I call the Energy Sapping Digest, which is a short, brief list of all the characteristics and things that I've been telling you. And I want to make that available to all the people on the call, along with a couple of bonuses, a couple of other books, Bouncing Back from Making a Fool of Yourself and Bouncing Back from Low Self-Esteem, for a price of $10. To get that, email me at Eileen, I-L-E-N-E, at emotionalpro.com, and just put energy sapping or booklet in your subject line, and I'll get back to you.
That's Eileen, I-L-E-N-E, uh-huh. at emotionalpro.com.
Right.
Okay.
You learn to recognize the patterns and nip it in the bud, and you feed the behaviors in the people around you when they're draining your energy. You just give them no energy, because people thrive on energy, and we humans get it in the form of attention. So if I pay attention, like getting upset with somebody who's drained my energy or done something manipulative, I feed them energy. And what's curious about it is a good energy sapper can pick up your energy reaction miles away, hundreds of miles away. So you really need to stop reacting.
And neutralize the emotion around that.
Yes, neutralize it. There's a exercise called the closed door exercise, where you imagine closing the door on the other person, and you're closing the door on your own emotional reaction, and just concentrate on the door instead.
And are you locking it, or are you keeping it?
You want to, but you sure as heck don't want to think about what's happening on the other side of the door. You're just concentrating on the door. Now, you had asked me before what else people can do. One of the things you can do is to create personal policies. Anybody who's tried to deal with a business, like an insurance company that, or some business, and they say, well, our policy is, and you know how frustrating it is. You can't get around their policy because it's their policy, right? And
yeah.
Most people don't realize that we can make personal policies, and they're just as powerful. For example, I could make a personal policy that says, the only type of relationships I allow myself to stay in are those in which I'm treated with respect. Or, I meet blind dates at restaurants. Or,
mm-hmm.
I continue dating people who meet my personal requirements.
This is like saying no by saying yes.
Exactly.
You know, I would love to. I would love to join you tomorrow, but unfortunately, I have other plans.
Well, yes, if that's true. I don't know. I like to tell the truth. So like I had an aunt, she's no longer living, but she called my home when I was dating my husband, and he has this darling daughter, she's 20 now, and she had put a recording on my answering machine when she was 9 years old, and I just treasured it. It was beautiful. My aunt calls up from the other side of the country and says, you can't have that on your answering machine, that's not professional. And I said, but it's my home. And she said, it's still not professional. Well, I was very angry with her. But I went out and dug in my garden, which is one of the things that replenishes me. And when I was there, I came up with a marvelous policy. And my policy was, you know, I was 53 on my last birthday, and I decided that now that I'm 53, I don't allow anybody to tell me how to live my life.
Good one.
It was so great.
Very good.
And we mentioned before alone versus lonely, but one of the things to keep you from getting involved in energy draining is to make a decision that it's all right to be alone, to teach yourself to be alone and to love it. One of my goals before I met my husband was to create in my life the love that I thought I would have if I had a marriage or a partner. And that was a good project while you're alone.
And, you know, especially for singles who are going to parties at events and around the holiday season, it seems to be even more difficult. Just accepting that you're alone and that it's okay to be alone, it's okay to be single, that you just haven't met your partner yet, I think that will go a long way to singles being more comfortable getting out and about, especially if there are a lot of couples at these events, you know?
What helped me is to realize if I was alone or single, then it must mean that I still had more to learn before I got together. Now, I think I mentioned to you before the call started, the man I married and met when I was 52 years old, thinking I might never have anybody else in my life ever, is a very powerful man. He's a neurosurgeon and has a brilliant mind and is much more powerful personally than any man I've ever been involved with. But those 20 years that I was on my own, I was developing my own personal power so that I now have the strength to deal with someone. I've developed my own capacity to deal with someone who really is my energy equivalent, my strength equivalent.
Yes, and that's very important.
Whereas before, I was putting up with people who weren't strong enough for me because I wasn't finished.
I want to make sure that we cover the 72-hour rule.
Absolutely.
Can we talk about that a bit?
The 72-hour rule is something that I was taught that has just transformed my experiences with other people. The 72-hour rule has to do with the fact that for human beings, it takes about 72 hours for new experiences, decisions, risks to get processed through our emotional selves. For example, I'm giving new information, perhaps information that a lot of people haven't heard right now, and I recommend that you follow the 72-hour rule, which means don't talk to anybody about what you've learned for 72 hours. Now, why? Because during that 72-hour period, you will be having a sorting process going on. Well, wait a minute. She said this, but does it work over here? Or it doesn't work because of that. Now, if you talk to somebody else and try to tell them what you learned, then you'll get their reaction to what they understand from you that you thought you heard, and pretty soon you're all confused and not purely having your own reaction to it.
And in a way, you're kind of editing before you've even had a chance to digest it.
Right. And there's one other thing that happens, and this is very important in relationships. Let's say I take the risk of telling somebody I'm attracted to that I'm attracted to them, and I've never really done that before. And they say, well, you know, that's very nice, and let me think about it. I'll get back to you, and we'll talk about this more because I'm very busy right now. All right? Let's say it takes them 3 or 4 days to get back to me. What's going to happen within a couple of hours of me taking that risk, probably, is that I will start into the what is known as the negative reaction. I'll start saying, oh, my gosh, I didn't say that, did I? oh, I probably didn't say it right. Maybe I should change this. And you're thinking you should change something that you did. Well, that's the wrong thing to do, because all you're really doing is going through the negative reaction, which is like in physics, when for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. I always forget whose rule it is. And if you will just hang on and go through the 72 hours, you may or may not feel the same way at the end of 72 hours. And the trick that I have found is when I start going through the negative reaction, I ask myself, how did I feel at the time I took this risk or learned this material? And that's usually how I feel at the end of 72 hours. Mm-hmm. But if I still feel upset at 72 hours, I can talk about it. But in the meantime, don't make any changes and don't backtrack and don't talk to people so that you can come through and solidify your own power.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice, Simon. So that's the 72-hour rule. I like it. Makes a lot of sense. And you also use a communication method.
Right. I want to talk about that. The desk plus a step method, DESC. And by the way, if anybody would like this, I offer it as a free handout. Again, write me at Eileen, I-L-E-N-E, at emotionalpro.com and put DESC, D-E-S-C, in your subject line, and I'll email it right to you. This was a method that was developed by a couple, Sharon and Gordon Bauer, who wrote a book called Assert Yourself. They taught at Kenyatta College, south of San Francisco. And in their book, they say, you know, lots of people said they like to speak up for themselves, but they don't know how. So they developed this little method. And my daughter taught it when she was a graduate student, and her student said there's not enough to it. We have to add a step. So that's why we have DESC plus a step. DESC is an acronym. It stands for Describe, Express, Specify, and Consequences. And don't use any more than three sentences in any one of these. So let's say, for example, I'm in a relationship with you, Frankie, and you leave dishes. Dirty dishes in the sink in the kitchen every time you eat, and it annoys the daylights out of me. All right? So to use DESC, I will say, Frankie, I noticed that when you eat something on a plate, you leave the plate in the sink and don't wash it for at least 24 hours. Now, that's just a statement. Describe. It's not, you know, okay. Hey, you're a slob, and, you know, it's just a statement.
So no judgment, just describing the issue.
Just describing what happens.
Okay.
Express is to express your emotions. When you do this, I feel upset. I feel put upon. I feel annoyed. And the trick here is most people say, I feel that, and what's followed by that is you. I feel that you, and that is not an emotion. An emotion is, I feel frustrated. I feel hurt. I feel angry, right? Only that statement.
So the express is all about you.
Yes, all about me and my emotions. Now, most people are pretty good at saying, you did this and I don't like it. So the next step is crucial because most people leave this out, and that is to specify what you want instead. What I'd like instead is your agreement that you will wash your dishes within 2 hours of the time you eat. Okay? And then the next step, the consequences, is you offer a positive consequence to the other person, as positive as you can get. If you will do this, then we'll have an easier time living together. That's a positive consequence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the plus a step. You seal the deal by asking for a commitment. Will you do that? Okay?
Okay.
Now, this is such a simple method, but so powerful and really effective with people in situations that it's hard to talk about. My son, 8 years old, 9 years old, used it one day. I went to school to pick him up. He was going to a new school. He caught a school bus to go home. And I had told him, don't get on the school bus today because you have a dental appointment. Well, he forgot. He got on the school bus, and the bus was pulling out of the parking lot, and thank goodness he saw me, and he talked the bus driver into letting him out so he could come and get in the car with me. As he got into the car, he said to me, you know, Mom, next time you want me to get off the bus, you have to write a letter to the bus driver. Now, I'd had a hard day, and I just turned to him and said, well, Jonathan, if you'd listened to me in the first place, you wouldn't have been on the bus. That's when he went into the DESC method. Listen to this. He said, Mom, when you say, well, Jonathan, if you'd listened to me in the first place, that's described, that hurts my feelings. That's expressed. He said, what I'd really like you to say to me is, well, Jonathan, everybody makes mistakes. Now, here's the positive consequence. and then I'd be happier to get in the car with you, okay? It's so simple and so
fabulous, very powerful. Yeah. And how do you resist the urge to name a negative consequence? I'm just playing the devil's advocate
well,
here.
It's up to you. I mean, we need a little bit of common sense. If I give somebody a negative consequence, they're not going to want to cooperate. So I resist it by realizing that it's a futile thing to do. It's just going to make my life a mess.
Absolutely.
And so it is kind of challenging to try to offer somebody a positive consequence when you're all angry with them.
Yeah. Well, you know, but what it says is that you have to be in an adult frame of mind to
move into this, right?
And that's important because once you recognize that, then you're just following a process and you're being adult about it. You're taking you're getting rid of all that childish emotion, and so
usually end up getting what you want.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Right, and like you said at the top of this hour, when you are energy sapping, it is so much work. You can never get enough of what you want when you manipulate because.
Mm-hmm.
The other person, your energy broker, takes their cut. You know, they
sure
don't ever
do.
Give you everything that you want. So why not go directly for it?
It's really a win-win if you set it up this way.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
And it has just changed my life. Absolutely. I want to remind or tell people about my radio program again, Full Power Living, which they can listen to on worldtalkradio.com, Studio A. We're in Studio A. And the live broadcast is 9 o'clock in the morning on Thursdays, but we have archives. The archives are on the World Talk Radio site and also on Emotional Pro. And we have over 100 programs archived, and they
are
fabulous programs.
Great.
Including several that my friend Dakey and I have done specifically on emotions, on emotional literacy and so forth, which I'll be talking about when I come back on November 8th.
Yeah, November the 8th.
Let me take you back to the closed door exercise, all right?
Okay.
What you need to do is give no energy to this person. And every time you get frustrated or feel annoyed or feel hopeless, that is giving energy. So the way to give no energy is to dedicate yourself to doing the closed door exercise. What that means is every time you hear about him, think about him, hear from him, or whatever, your first action is to give a loan, close your eyes, and envision a closed door, a solid closed door with solid walls around it. And you concentrate on that door, on the color, the texture, the fixtures, the strength of it, the solidity of it, until you feel yourself calmer. And you do that every single time. I learned to do that with my ex-husband, my second husband, who was a kind of a hanging-on kind of person. So this little exercise is really powerful. Just close the door. Just refuse. No energy, because he feeds off of energy. Now, when you cut off the energy, what happens with an energy drainer is they ramp up the number of things they try to do. So expect that he will try to get hold of you even more. But hold steadfast. Do not allow yourself to get emotional about it. Just like, I'm cutting you off. That's it. You have no energy. And he will, because he's desperate to have energy from another person. When you starve him like that, he will have to move on.
Now, we have a question on the webcast from Jean, and she says, would you explain again how to use the 72-hour rule and how you would deal with a boss who is an energy zapper?
Move out of the state. Change your phone number. No. Well, again, why do we have a boss who's an energy drainer? Because we have something to learn. And you're in an interesting situation when you're employed by someone who's an energy drainer, because you literally do feel like you need their particular job and that particular paycheck in order to survive. So one thing you might consider is, do you actually need that particular job and that particular boss? If you can take the risk of being on your own or changing, that may be your solution. However, it's my experience that because energy draining has to do with something we need to learn about, that what you will do is take the problem with you, and you'll find another energy draining boss. Just like with children, not giving energy to an energy drainer can be as simple as turning your back on them. If you just turn a little bit and don't look them squarely in the eye. If you go to the bathroom, take a bathroom break instead of standing there and allowing somebody to drain your energy. Going over the 72-hour rule again, the point of the 72-hour rule is that it takes 72 hours for new information and risks to pass through us. So by and large, don't talk with anybody about something that's upsetting to you, something that's happened. I'll give you an example. A week and a half ago, sometimes my rings bother me, so I took my wedding band off while I was on the phone with somebody, and lo and behold, the next morning I realized I didn't have my wedding band anymore, and I didn't know where it was. And I could have gone and talked to my husband and said, oh, I've lost my wedding band, I feel so upset, blah, 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 blah. I decided to follow the 72-hour rule. I said nothing about it. And in the meantime, I said, it's my wedding band, and it's coming back to me. I went over all the places that I'd been and so forth and so on, and I wasn't finding it, but I stayed calm. I didn't feed it a lot of energy. I kept calling it back to me. And the long and the short of it is, it took 5 days, actually, before I realized that I had put it on my little finger on the other hand and then had gone down and started making dinner. And, of course, I dropped it in the trash. And I went through the trash bag, and there it was. And then I told my husband about it, and I said, it's not that I was trying to keep this from you. It was that I didn't want any negative energy to go on this because I wanted to find my ring.
Great story. We had a baby this year, and I also got married after we had the baby. And my mother does not like my husband and has done everything she could to cause tension and to make me feel not educated enough, he's not this enough. And I have pretty much cut her off, but it's really sad because, you know, she's got her first granddaughter, and she's missing out on that, and so are, you know, so is my daughter. How do we forgive, and how do we move on, and how do we, I love the personal policy idea, how do we set a personal policy that still lets somebody be in our lives that we love, but just in not such a way that they can bring us down?
Well, let me tell you, Elizabeth, how I did it with my daughter one time. In the family I grew up in, my father was abusive physically and sexually. That was not the first generation of this, right? So it's like a family pattern. And every girl... child after me, my sister's child, etc., etc., every girl child has had a situation in which they were in an abusive relationship, whether it was physical or verbal, right? And my daughter, when she was about 19, was in a relationship with a young man, and he was verbally abusive. And she talked with me about it, and I told her, I believe this is a verbally abusive relationship, but I respect that you have something to learn here. I just hope you'll learn it soon. And I went one day to her work. She was alone, and she said, oh, you can't believe what he said to me today, and blah, 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 blah. And only after I left did I realize that when I walked in to see her, I was feeling great. I had just taught a class. I was feeling great. And when I walked out, I was all doubled over and felt terrible. And I realized that I had lost my energy there. And it made me think about it, and I thought, oh, my gosh. My daughter had been telling me she wanted to get out of this relationship for probably 3 or 4 months. And she hadn't gotten out of it. And I was a little frustrated. Why wasn't she getting out of it? And I realized it was because I was giving her energy for being in it. I was listening to her tell me all the terrible things this guy was doing. So when I got home, I called her on the phone, and I said, I hope you understand this is the most loving thing I can think to do, but I am no longer going to listen to you tell me all the terrible things this guy does. I am happy to listen to all the good things, but if you even start to tell me, I will say, I'm not listening to this. If you keep going, I'll hang up the phone. If I'm in your presence, I will walk away. I'm not doing you any favors to give you energy for being in this relationship. Now, I did not know where that would take me, but she was out of that relationship in 2 weeks. We need to stop giving energy to things that are not self-enhancing. Now, in terms of how to let go, you named it. You said forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
The word forgiveness means to let go. I'm going to guess, and you don't have to validate this, but I'm going to guess this is not the first time your mother has ever operated this way in your life. Well, in a sense, you could think of it as a blessing for your baby that this woman is not in your life, because if she's willing to treat you that way, she's going to be willing to treat your child that way, too,
mm-hmm.
as time goes on. But you can, because she's your mother, you have things to learn, you can learn to surround her with forgiveness, and you with forgiveness, and your husband and your child, everybody, with the pink energy of forgiveness. You work. The other thing is to ask for help with forgiveness,
mm-hmm.
because we don't forgive for the other person. We forgive for ourselves. And often we feel like we're going to lose something if we forgive the other person. That's not it. You're still on the hook. Okay?
Forgiveness is very liberating.
Absolutely. Well, you can use that closed door exercise, too. One of the things that is hard for us when we're adults is to give up on our hope that one day our parent will be the person that we want them to be.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the hardest parts of it is to realize that all the ways we've tied ourselves in knots in order to get their love through all the years was a waste of time, because the person doesn't have it in them to give it.
You know, I think that if you focus, Elizabeth, more on what you would like the relationship to be with your mother,
great.
Visualize that, feel how it would be, you know, what are the emotions that would come up with that ideal relationship with her. And any time you feel these negative thoughts coming in, get rid of them. Stop them and go back to that visualization of, you know, how wonderful it would be. And strangely enough, and I've had personal experience with this, it works. It's an amazing, something happens. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's law of attraction. Maybe it's just the power of positive thinking and, you know, that we thought is energy and all of that stuff. But that's something else that you may want to think about trying.
Well, let me add on to that, Frankie, because I mentioned that pay attention to what you want to become and not to what
mm-hmm.
you want to overcome.
Right.
In our culture, we pretty much have been trained to look at the problem, to focus on the problem. Like, if I want to stop smoking, I have a problem with smoking, I have to go to a stop smoking, I can't smoke anymore, how did I get into smoking? And every time we pay attention to something, we feed it energy. So we're literally feeding the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're suggesting is that Elizabeth feed the solution,
mm-hmm.
where she wants to go. And mm-hmm. what happens when we do that is the problem atrophies and drops away. Now, there is the possibility that your mother won't be able to make the leap and she won't be able to come back into your life. And you have to face that possibility. But the likelihood is greater when you do what you suggested, Frankie, that you will get to the positive place that you want to get.
Mm-hmm.
To give no energy, you're actually giving energy to yourself. That's what's really there. I'm focusing on me. I'm focusing on the kind of life I want to have. I'm focusing on what makes me feel good. And you are not part of the equation. I give you no energy.
It's like you're diverting the energy that you would have spent on the other person, channeling it back to yourself.
Absolutely. And that's what giving no energy is.
Early on in a new relationship, what would someone possibly be looking for?
That is interesting, Charlotte. Let me tell you something about myself. Years ago, I guess right after my first marriage ended, I did a lot of dating, and I soon realized that I began to characterize myself as a slot machine that paid off without anybody putting any quarters in it, because what I would do is I would treat my dates, the men I was dating or had a relationship with, I would treat them wonderfully. I would make them home-cooked meals. I would cater to their wishes, etc., etc. And then a time would come along when I'd want something or need something for myself, and I'd ask them, and they would sort of look at me blankly like, you've got to be kidding. And I would be furious. I'd say, oh, that's the way men are. They don't like to give. That was not the problem, obviously. The problem was that the way a relationship starts off, it tends to continue. And so I was starting all my relationships off with me giving, 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 and not asking for anything in return or not expecting anything in return. So naturally, that's the way they tended to continue. So the trick in the beginning of a relationship, and this I think is where our energy sapping in the culture, you know, we're all taught to put your best foot forward, to if somebody does something on a date or when we're dating them that doesn't really feel good, we sort of give an explanation, oh, they must be having a bad day or maybe it'll be better tomorrow. So I think the real key is for you to take a look, be conscious, as Frankie, you've been saying, be conscious of what your experience in a relationship is from the beginning and make sure that you feel good in it. And if there's even a third or a quarter of the time you're really not feeling good, that's not the relationship for you. And get out of it. Nip it in the bud. Don't stay there. Because the way it starts out, it'll continue, and it'll only get worse. And so that's what you look for, not for, you know, what's not good, but look for, am I feeling really good in this relationship? Remember, one whole complete unit plus another whole complete unit form a unity, something that's better, something that's bigger. If you're not getting that, what's the point of staying there?
I think that red flags in a relationship, especially a new relationship, because that's really what we're talking about, when you're conscious, when you're aware, instead of covering up the red flag like we typically would do if we weren't conscious, we really want to dig around that red flag and we want to reveal everything, the roots of it. We want to see everything about it because it reveals so much about the lessons we need to learn, about compatibility, I mean, just everything.
And it also keeps you from wasting your time.
Absolutely.
All of us must have spent hundreds of years wasting our time in relationships that don't fit us by trying to tolerate them instead of digging around the red flags. I totally agree with you. And why? Life is too short.
Well, Eileen, I'd like to thank you very much for sharing this. This is really a fascinating topic. And I have learned so much, and I'm anxious to start applying some of your ideas to my own life. And just for everyone again, it's Eileen@emotionalpro.com, and she has some information, the desk, and what was the other one?
It's the booklet on energy sapping with the energy sapping digest, and it's $10 for actually three booklets and the digest, so if they'll just write me and say book.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you for participating in tonight's call. And our programs are recorded, as you know, and they're available for later listening on our podcast website at www.consciousrelationshippodcast.com. Be sure to mark your calendars for our next program in November on the 8th called Emotional Mastery, The Key to Incredible Relating, and it's with Eileen again. And Eileen, we look forward to having you join us again next month.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, and I appreciate the opportunity to share something that's made such a difference in my life and in lots of other people's lives. Thank you for the opportunity, Frankie.
Thank you so much, and thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we'll see you next month.